My name is Ashley. I am the executive editor at Philadelphia Magazine, and I am beyond honored to be part of this event. The speaker's lounge where you do check-in overlooks the main conference area, and it was an unbelievable view to see all of those women out there here, you know, gathered together in the morning, watching, being so excited about a great day. So I'm really excited. This is one of the breakout sessions that they have today. It is Your Own Sweet Time, Building a Life That Works for You. Obviously, time management for women is a giant issue and actually a necessity. I can tell you about my last 24 hours and my next, which includes leaving here and picking up my daughter at daycare, getting to my house to get my suitcase, which I haven't packed yet, taking an Uber to the airport to go to Dallas for my sister's baby shower. You know, I don't know how it's going to all get done in the next 12 hours, but we'll see. So I'm excited to be a part of this event. Philadelphia Magazine is a sponsor of the event, and we also have our own event called ThinkFest, which is very similar. It's about showcasing Philadelphia speakers, and we have an amazing array of women speaking at our event this year, including Madeline Bell, who's the new CEO of CHOP. Not many female CEOs in Philadelphia. So we're excited to have her, as well as many others. So we have a table out in the exhibit area where you can win tickets to the event and even win a mentoring luncheon with one of our speakers. So we'll talk about today's event. So we have here Laura Vanderkam. She is an amazing writer. She's written a bunch of books, a lot about time management, including I Know How She Does It. She lives outside of Philadelphia with her 4 children. So I'm complaining about my 2. So I'm very curious to hear what she has to say today. Her book is wonderful. Her books are written in an extremely relatable way. She's beyond her books. She's written for the Wall Street Journal, Fortune, a bunch of other publications, although not Philadelphia Magazine. So we're gonna have to do something about that. So I'll let Laura explain more a little bit about what she's gonna talk about, and then she'll talk for about 45 minutes, and then we'll have a Q&A session at the end. So welcome, Laura.
Thank you. Real quick, I know we have some empty seats over toward this, so if you're just coming in, please make your way over to this side. There's plenty of room over there. So I heard a little rumor, as I've been talking with people before this session and in the halls, hearing a little thing, that we have a bunch of busy people in here. Is that true? Do we have some busy people? Well, I thought it would be fun to do a little quiz to find the busiest person in the room. Okay? So 10-question quiz, you're going to give yourself a point for each yes answer. There is a prize, so I encourage you to answer honestly. You can, if you've got a piece of paper, that's great, or you can pull out your phone. I'll pretend you're not checking email. All right, question number 1. All right, give yourself a point if you get over 100 emails a day. Real emails here, not J.Crew ads. Question 2, give yourself a point if you did work before 7 a.m. or after 10 p.m. in the last week. Question 3, give yourself a point if you flew somewhere in the last week. Question 4, give yourself a point if you were double booked for a time slot in the last week. Question 5, give yourself a point if you actually attempted to take 2 meetings or do 2 phone calls at the same time. Question 6, give yourself a point if you have kids at home. Question 7, give yourself a point if you have 3 or more of them, or if any of them are under age 3. You can double up if you've got both. Question 8, give yourself a point if you attended a conference or networking event other than this one in the last week. Question 9, give yourself a point if you ate a meal in the car or on public transit in the last week. And question 10, give yourself a point if you schedule things in less than 10-minute increments. So on your calendar, it says 10 to 10:08. Do this. All right, I want you to add them up. We're going to do this in the no opt-out version. I know nobody wants to volunteer that they've got the time. So everyone, please stand up. Please stand up. I want you to sit down if you have 0 or 1 points. Sit down if you have 2 points. 3 points, 4 points, 5 points, 6 points, 7 points, 8 points, 9 points. Is anyone still standing? No? No one's still standing? All right, we had somebody right up in front here. Who is still standing at nine? Who is still standing? All right, here. Come on up. This is yours.
I don't think we should clap.
Yes. Congrats. It's an audiobook because I know you don't have time to read. So as we can see, we're all extremely busy people in this room. And as you are looking forward to your illustrious lives, you may be wondering, will I always be busy? And the answer is yes. But I hope to convince you today that the full life can be the good life, and we can build the lives we want in the time that we've got. To do that, though, we need to rethink some common misperceptions about time. And we're going to learn 7 of my favorite time management strategies that have come out of studying how successful people spend their time. So that's what we're going to cover today. First, a little bit about me. People often ask me how I came to the topic of time management. I think that is a nice way of asking, how do you get to be a time management expert? Unfortunately, it is not because I am always on time. I wish I were. I have 4 small children, and I would like to blame them for my occasional tardiness. But sometimes it's really just not their fault. I was once late to my own speech on time management. Yeah, we all just had to take a moment together. Enjoy that irony. The truth is, I'm a journalist, and over the years, I've gotten to interview many successful people, and I've noticed something, that there's a certain class of people who are doing great things at work, and yet they also seem to have amazing personal lives as well. So they have, you know, happy families, they're running marathons, or they're volunteering at their houses of worship and so forth. And, you know, so you're asking, well, what's going on? Do they have more hours than the rest of us? And no, they don't. They all have the exact same 24 hours in a day, 168 hours in a week, 8,760 hours in a year, or 8,784 in this particular year, 2016. And so they don't have more time than the rest of us. So I'm like, well, what are they doing differently with their time? And what can the rest of us learn from that? And so I've made a career of trying to study that, and not just, you know, asking people what they do, but asking them to really keep track of their time so I can study it. And so what I want to talk about today is what I've learned in particular from studying how successful women spend their time. I recently did a time diary study of 1,001 days in the lives of professional women who also had families. Asked them to keep track of their time for a week. I could see how much they were working and sleeping and doing errands, housework, hanging out with their kids, all that stuff. And in particular, I was interested in professional women with families because there's this story out here. I know you know this, in various forms of can't have it all kind of narratives. And I've read a lot of these stories over the year. They're usually take a certain format, which is that our heroine is this hard-charging professional, right? She's doing her level best to combine work and family, when a series of dark moments leads to this epiphany that something must change. Life is unsustainable. She must dial down, scale back, opt out, join with a Greek chorus of the disillusioned, chanting that no one can have it all, right? We all have these stories like this. But I was wondering, is this actually the full story? And when you look at successful women's lives hour by hour, is it crazy or is it not? And I can tell you, it's actually not as crazy as we might think. So I had these women keep track of their time for a week. I added up various categories. Some good news, these women were all, you know, big six-figure jobs. They were working on average 44 hours a week. 44 is more than 40, but it is not a lot more than 40. They were also sleeping, in general, enough. 54 hours a week, which if you do the math, that's just a little bit under 8 hours a day. No one believes me when I tell them that, but when you have people keep track of the week. So there are 168 hours in a week, and if you add 44 for work, 54 for sleep, subtract from 168, that leaves 70 hours for other things. So perhaps it's not surprising that women were able to have full family and personal lives in 70 hours a week, because 70 hours is quite a bit of time. Now, of course, it wasn't, you know, immediately obvious how you do that. People had to do a lot of various strategies, move hours around of different things. And so I got to interview most of these women about their strategies, and that became my book, I Know How She Does It. And so I want to share seven of my favorite time management strategies that came out of that today. So the first strategy is to mind your hours. So I had everyone in this project keep track of their time for a week. And if you want to spend your time better, I would highly recommend trying as well. The best way to figure out how to spend your time better is to figure out exactly how you're spending it now, right? Because that way you can figure out what you need to change. There's lots of things you can do. You can carry around a little notebook, like a little Moleskine notebook if you want to look all artsy. You can use just a spreadsheet. That's what I use. You can use one of a million time tracking apps. The tool itself does not matter. What matters is that you do it. And when I suggest people track their time, I get a little bit of pushback about it, right? And I think it's the exact same thing that if you've ever tried to lose weight, you know that nutritionists will tell you to keep a food journal. And that is because it works. There's pretty good evidence that people who track what they eat lose more weight than people who do not. So you think we'd be all over that. But the truth is that we just don't want to know, right? We don't want to know that we grabbed 6 chocolate macaroons from the kitchen next to our home office over the course of a day, which is a purely hypothetical example. We don't want to know. And it's the same thing with time. We don't want to know how much time we are wasting, right? So let's get this out of the way. We all waste time. I waste time, you waste time, our winner over here maybe not waste time, but the rest of us, we waste time. Keeping track of your time is not about figuring out how much time you are wasting. It is about making sure you are not telling yourself stories about your time that are not actually true. And when it comes to time, we have all kinds of stories we tell ourselves. Some of my favorite, how many hours we work. I'm sure you've been part of these scintillating conversations, right? They go, oh, I worked 60 hours last week. 60, I wish I worked 60. I worked 70 hours last week. 70, 70 is my light season. So on it goes. I once had a young man at a party tell me he was working 180 hours a week at his startup. It's pretty impressive if you think about it. There was once a study comparing people's estimated work weeks with time diaries, found that people claiming 75 plus hour weeks were off by about 25 hours. You can guess in which direction, right? Not underestimating. So there's that. We underestimate sleep. I mean, people ask you what's a typical night. I don't know. Do you add up how many hours you slept for a week and divide by 7? No. Like, you're not doing that. So we tend to recall the worst night first. We want to tell that story of when we were up late with the little kid and then had to get on the 6 o'clock flight in the morning. You know, it turns out the average American actually sleeps more than 8 hours a day. If you look at time diary studies, no one believes that one either. It doesn't mean that you sleep more than 8 hours. I know I don't. I track my time for a year. I slept 7.4 hours per day, in case anyone was curious. We underestimate leisure time, often to the point of sheer ridiculousness. I was reading Real Simple magazine. There was an issue a couple of years ago, actually, now. And they had their time-starved readers write in with what they would do in an extra 15 minutes in a day. So 168 hours in a week, extra 15 minutes in a day gives you 169.75 hours a week. So clearly everything's going to be entirely different, right? And yeah, people had this idea what they would do in these 15 minutes. But my favorite is a woman who wrote in saying that 15 minutes of uninterrupted writing time would be a priceless gift, which left me wondering where she found 15 minutes to read Real Simple, write in a letter about this elusive dream of hers. So whatever, we have these faulty notions of where the time goes, but sometimes the stories we tell ourselves are a little bit more poignant. And one of the ladies who kept track of her time for me for I Know How She Does It was an executive at a major tech company. She had been telling herself, I never see my family, right? I have a big job at a tech company, ergo, I must never see my family, right? That's the story we tell. She kept track of her time for a week. She was working 48 hours, which is a long work week. You know, you do the 75 hours off by 25, that's like a 73-hour work week. So she was working 48 hours, but she was working them in such a way that she'd come home basically when her kids were done with sports. She'd be there in the evening with them the whole time. She'd do more work after they went to bed. So basically, every waking minute that they were home, she was there with them. And she looked at that and she goes, oh, I used to feel guilt. I don't feel guilt anymore. If she wanted to go to the gym sometime, it was okay. So that is why we keep a time log. Make sure we're not telling ourselves stories about time that are not actually true. So here's how you do it. You write down what you're doing, try to keep going for a week, add up the various categories, work, sleep, housework, time with family, and time in the car, and then ask yourself a couple questions about it. First, what do I like most about my schedule? Second, what do I want to do more of with my time? And third, what do I want to get off my plate? So that's strategy one. Strategy two is to look forward. So when it comes to time, we spend a lot of time thinking about that third question, right? What do we want to spend less time doing? And I hear from time to time from magazines that are often looking at doing a story along these lines. It's generally going to be like, we want to help our readers find an extra hour in the day. So the idea is we're going to shave bits of time off everyday activities. We're going to add it up. We're going to have time for the good stuff. And I question the whole premise of this article, but I'm always interested to hear what they have come up with before they call me, right? I like time hacks as much as anyone else. So some of my favorites, doing errands in a way where you only have to make right-hand turns. Being extremely judicious in microwave usage, so it says like 3 to 3.5 minutes on the package. We are totally getting in on the bottom side of that. And then my personal favorite, which makes sense on some level, is to DVR your favorite shows, right? And that way you can fast forward through the commercials. So you save 8 minutes every half hour, and in the course of watching 2 hours of TV, you find 32 minutes to exercise, which is true. You know another way to find 32 minutes to exercise? Don't watch 2 hours of TV a day. I was once talking with a television talk show that was going to do a show, an hour-long show, on how to help their viewers find an extra hour in a day. this is never going to work. This is never going to work. But I think, you know, as I think about it, this idea has it completely backwards, that we'll shave bits of time off everyday activities, add it up, have time for what we want to do. I don't think we build the lives we want by saving time. We build the lives we want, and then time saves itself. I think it is much more productive to focus on the question of what we want to spend more time doing in our lives. And so when I do workshops with people, I have people make a really long list of like 100 things they want to spend more time doing. You can have three categories: career, relationship, self. People are like, career, why? There's probably something at work. Even if you don't want to spend more time at work, there's something at work you want to spend more time doing, mentoring or reading professional literature, all that. I'm going to give you a minute, actually, to think about it. So think about, what would you like to spend more time doing in your life? If you've got a piece of paper, you can take a note or two. Out of curiosity, how many people put exercise on there? Yeah. What a surprise. So I encourage you to make a good long list. I tell people to go like all the way to 100. The first third is pretty easy. People want to travel more, so the first third is like the 33 countries they want to visit. After that, it starts getting a little bit more complicated. Then you start thinking things like, oh, well, there's this state park that's an hour away. We've lived here 6 years. We've never gone to. That's something I'd like to try. Or, you know, you want to spend more time knitting or reading or things like this. Be very specific, actual books you want to read, and try to go all the way to 100. And then we've got this long list, and then we need to figure out, well, how can we make this be something I can actually work with in the near term? And so there's two strategies you can use, figuring out professionally and personally. For the professional side, I'm sure many people in the next month or two are going to sit down for an annual performance review. Either you will be getting one, or you will be giving one. Talk about what happened in the last year, the good stuff, the opportunities for growth, the good stuff again in that nice little sandwich. And so, you know, this has its purpose, but I think it's actually more effective to do this looking forward, especially since this year's kind of done, sorry. But pretend it's the end of 2017, and you are sitting down for your annual performance review, and you are popping the corks on the champagne. It has been an amazing year for you professionally. What 3 to 5 things did you do that made it so amazing? So you can write next year's performance review now. And you can do this for your personal life, too. I'm sure many of you, come December, like me, get cards that contain these folded up sheets of colored paper on which is written what is known as the family holiday letter. Bit of a wretched genre of literature. It goes on about how amazing everyone in the household is, or even more scintillating, how busy everyone is in the household is. But they serve a purpose, which is that they tell our friends and family what we did in our personal life that mattered to us over the course of the year. Right? So you can write next year's family holiday letter now. Pretend it is the end of December 2017. You are writing the family holiday letter. It has been an amazing year for you and the people you care about. What 3 to 5 things did you do that made it so amazing? So you can write this letter now. Don't send it. Like, please do not send it. But you can write it. And now between the performance review and the family holiday letter, we have a list of 6 to 10 goals that we can start thinking about for the next year. And then we need to start breaking them down into doable steps. So maybe you want to write a family history. Well, you probably should read some others to get a sense for the style. Think about the questions you want to ask your relatives. Make appointments to meet with them. Set up the interviews, do the interviews, record them. Maybe make an outline and so forth. Those are all doable steps. Maybe you want to run a 5K, so you need to find a race, sign up for it, maybe get a training plan, find those shoes in the back of the closet. These are all doable steps. So that's strategy 2, is to look forward. We had mind your hours, look forward. Strategy 3 is first things first. So this is a phrase I'm taking from one of my favorite productivity books, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, the late Stephen Covey. If you've never read it, you really should. It's really a classic of the literature. What's funny to me, I was rereading it recently. It came out in 1990. I have one of the first editions. And it came out in 1990, which was before most people had email that they were using regularly. And he talks about how people waste all this time on things that are urgent but not important, which got me thinking, well, before email, what was that? Like, what were we spending our time on? I don't know. We were messing around with the actual mail pile or something. We have always managed to waste time. But in the context of time management, first things first means that time is highly elastic. We cannot make more time, but time will stretch to accommodate what we choose to put into it first. And I saw this best from one of the time logs for I Know How She Does It. This is a woman who worked in finance, 2 kids, busy life, goes out for a Wednesday night for something, comes home and finds that her water heater has broken. There is now water all over her basement. Anyone had this happen to you? You know, it's a huge mess, water everywhere. So on her time log, it shows her dealing with this, the immediate aftermath that night. Next day, she's got plumbers coming in to deal with the problem. Day after that, professional cleaning crew dealing with the ruined carpet. All this is being recorded on her time log. It winds up taking 7 hours of her week. 7 hours. Wow, she just found an extra hour in the day, right? But I'm sure if you had asked her at the start of the week, could you find 7 hours to train for a triathlon? Could you find 7 hours to mentor 7 worthy people? I'm sure she would have said what most of us would have said, which is no. Can't you see how busy I am? Yet when she had to find 7 hours, because there is water all over her basement, she found 7 hours. Time is elastic. We cannot make more time, but time will stretch to accommodate what we need or want to put into it. And so the key to time management is treating our priorities as the equivalent of that broken water heater. We need to get to them first things first. And to get at this, I like to use some language from one of the busiest people I ever interviewed. By busy, I mean she was running a small business with 12 people on the payroll. She had 6 children in her spare time. I was trying to get in touch with her. I remember it was a Thursday morning to set up an interview about how she had it all. Right? She was not available to speak with me, perhaps not surprising. But the reason she was not available to speak with me is that she was out for a hike because it was a beautiful spring day and she wanted to go for a hike. So of course that made me even more intrigued. And when I finally caught up with her, she explained it like this. She said, listen, Laura, everything I do, every minute I spend is my choice. And rather than say, I don't have time to do X, Y, or Z, she'd say, I don't do X, Y, or Z because it's not a priority. I don't have time means it's not a priority. If you think about it, that is actually more accurate language. I mean, I could tell you I don't have time to dust my blinds, but that's not true. If somebody offered to pay me $100,000 to go dust my blinds, I would get to it pretty quickly. Since that's not going to happen, I can acknowledge it's not a matter of lacking time. It's that I don't want to do it. Using this language reminds us that time is a choice. And granted, there may be horrible consequences for choosing differently, choosing not to show up at work tomorrow, probably some consequences. But in the long run, we are smart women in a rich country, and we have the power to fill our lives with the things that deserve to be there. People say, okay, that's great. Yay, first things first. Practically, how do I do that? All right, so we think of our lives often in days, but we actually live our lives in weeks. And so we put first things first and treat our priorities as the equivalent of that broken water heater by thinking through our weeks before we are in them. And a really good time to do this is Friday afternoons. So Friday afternoon is what an economist might call a low opportunity cost time. Most of us are not sitting there on Friday afternoon saying, I am excited to make progress toward my personal and professional priorities right now. But we are willing to think about what those might be for the next week. So take a little bit of time Friday afternoon. Make yourself that three-category priority list: career, relationships, self. Making a three-category list reminds us that there should be something in all three categories. Career, we think about. Relationships, self, not so much. But just put 2 to 3 items in each, and then look at the whole of the next week and see where you can put them in. So that's strategy 3, first things first. Strategy 4 is to move the tiles around. So when I was writing I Know How She Does It and studying the people's time logs, I had everyone keep track of their time on a spreadsheet, and I got a little pushback for this because people were like, I don't like the idea of shoehorning my life into cells on a grid. It's like, okay, well, let's not think of it as cells on a grid. Let's think of it as tiles in a mosaic. And we are the artists. We are the mosaic makers, deciding what we want these tiles to look like. And we can move them around to make a pattern that works for us. And what this means for time is that things don't have to happen at the normal time, and things don't have to happen at the same time every day in order to count in our lives. So among the women I studied, work-life integration was really the name of the game. I think, you know, some people think work should be work, home should be home, never the two shall meet. But if you are willing to have all 168 hours in play for either, you can actually work the longer hours you might need to advance at work, and yet also spend more time on high-quality personal activities as well. So one particular way I saw a lot of women do this is they work what I call a split shift. So that's what that tech executive was doing. If you have to work long hours and you have a family or something else you really want to do in your personal life, you have a couple of choices. One is that you just keep working until you're done, and then you come home and watch TV and go to bed and you feel sad. That's one option. Another, if you have some flexibility in your life, is that you leave work at a good time, whatever that is for you, 5, 6, I don't know, it's different in different industries. Go home, spend the evening with your family or volunteering or exercising or hanging out with your friends, and then do more work at night, either after the kids go to bed or after you've done your other things, some of the more lower energy tasks, responding to those emails, planning for the next day. And so close to half of the women in my study actually did that they would work a split shift at some point during the week. Another thing some women did is consciously working on weekends. And if you think about it, you know, a lot, it sounds really bad to work on weekends, but if you are trying to have a more reasonable life during the week, if you're trying to hit a certain number of hours, if you work for 5 hours on the weekend, that's an hour earlier you could leave every day during the week. And so people would try to do it in a good way, like a little bit on Sunday morning and a little bit on Saturday morning, a little bit on Sunday night, so there's still a good weekend in there. But that was a strategy some people used as well. So they move the tiles around like that. Another really important thing I found them doing was really looking in terms of 168 hours, not 24. So if you take nothing else from our talk today, I hope you'll remember this. Think in terms of 168 hours, not 24. People often say, well, you know, Laura, there's not enough hours in the day to get to everything I want to do. And that's true. There aren't enough hours in 24 to get to everything you want to do. But fortunately, we don't live our lives in days. We live them in weeks. And when you look at the whole of the week, many of those harsh trade-offs people are seeing can be viewed in a different light. So we had a lot of people who said, you know, I see this in particular with exercise. We had a lot of people say they want to exercise more. People say that all the time, and then they talk themselves out of it because there is not a perfect time every single day, right? So they say, oh, I'd love to exercise. Really? I'd love to exercise. But I'm not the kind of person who can leave for an hour at lunch every day. Or I'd love to exercise, but I have a family. I can't go to the gym for an hour after work every day. I want to see them. Or I'd love to exercise, but I just can't stomach the idea of getting up at 5:30 a.m. every morning. All right, well, here's an idea. Don't wake up at 5:30 a.m. every morning. Look at the whole of the week and see where you can fit it in. Maybe one day a week you get up a little bit early, do something. Another day you go for a brisk walk at lunch. Another day, if you're co-parenting with someone, maybe you trade off. Each of you get a night off. You can go to the gym if you want. Do something on the weekend when your family is passed out on the couch watching a movie, not requiring your presence. And wow, we just exercised 4 times a week. It wasn't every day at the same time, but it didn't have to be. And in particular, when I see harsh trade-offs of work and life, this 24-hour versus 168-hour mindset is often coming into play. So I got an email from a woman who is a new manager. She was really trying to figure out her role. She also had young kids. And she's like, well, I know my team wants me to take them out for drinks, out for dinner. It'd probably be good for us. We'd bond. Like, they'd see me in a different light as opposed to just being the, you know, harsh taskmaster. So I know they want me to do that, but I feel so guilty. I get home to my kids, right? Like, I got to get home to my kids. Working mothers can't do happy hours. I'm like, okay, didn't know that rule. But let's look at this. Let's unpack it a little. Does your team want you to take them out every single night? Well, no. I mean, I'm guessing most people don't want to hang out with their boss every night, even if all they're caring for is houseplants. But, you know, if you just took them out like one night a week or something, you stay late one night a week, one night you're with them, six nights you're home. So in the 168-hour version, we're the kind of parent who's there reading bedtime stories almost every night and the kind of manager who's nurturing her relationship with her team. Whereas if we only see 24 hours, we're trading one against the other. So think in terms of 168 hours, not 24. And then another thing I saw a lot of women do is really use their mornings. So I said you don't have to wake up at 5:30 a.m. every morning to exercise, but if you do, you're far more likely to stick with it. And it turns out that mornings are a great time for getting stuff done. This is time you can have for yourself before everyone else's priorities start invading. A lot of work emergencies at 5:30 p.m., fewer work emergencies at 5:30 a.m., right? Morning's a great time for doing things that are important for us, either nurturing your career, nurturing your relationships, nurturing yourself. If there's something you really want to do in life, you can't figure out where to do it, try waking up half an hour earlier, seeing if you can fit it in then. It turns out we have more willpower in the morning. Some research looking into this. Willpower is like a muscle. We use it up over the course of the day. It gets fatigued through overuse as we are dealing with difficult people, biting our tongues in traffic. If you think about it, diets aren't broken with a spoon going straight into the Haagen-Dazs at 7 a.m. It's really more of a 10 p.m. sort of activity. You seldom hear of crimes of passion occurring at 6 a.m. So we have more focus, willpower, discipline in the morning, so it makes a great time for, if you're going to write that novel, you get up and do it. If you're going to exercise, or you have spiritual disciplines you want to do, getting up and doing it. Or even just doing family breakfast. Like, if family dinner is not going to happen because of crazy work schedules, family breakfast can be an awesome substitute. So take that time. That is time you can have for yourself. So that's strategy four, is to move the tiles around. Strategy five is to build in space. So we have these great things we're trying to plan into our lives, first things first. We are moving the tiles around to make it fit. And you say, well, I'm just going to be busier because I've got all this other stuff I still have to do. And I don't want you to be busier. We're going to talk about how to make you less busy, all right? Really successful people I've found are good about building space into their lives. And there's a couple reasons for this. The first reason is it's just practical. Everything takes longer than you think it will, right? So building in space to our lives means that we're not late and rushing. And no one likes to be late and rushing. The second reason is it helps us seize opportunities that come up. Now, if you've got people reporting to you at work and someone wants to come talk with you about great ideas she has for the business, ideas for her career, you don't want to be, well, you know, I've got an 8-minute slot at 4:12. Can you come back then? You want to seize these opportunities when they come up. So how do you do that? Well, you have to build in space to your life. And there's a couple ways we can do this. The first is to be very careful with your yeses, right? It's easy to say yes to things. It becomes easier the farther it is in the future. There's a funny thing about the human brain. We're like, oh, December me. December me is going to be totally different. December me is not going to be this busy. December me is going to have it totally together. So yes, December me can totally take that on, right? Well, no, you're going to be the exact same person in December. You are going to be just as busy, but you will also have this other commitment that you are lukewarm about on your calendar now as well. So be very careful with your yes. Ask yourself, would I do this tomorrow? And now you're protesting, well, I'm busy tomorrow, I'm booked tomorrow. Well, that's the idea, right? Like, would you want to cancel things? Would you move things around? And even if that's impossible, would you be extremely tempted to do it tomorrow? And if the answer is yes, then you will probably feel the same way in December. But if not, it maybe should be a no. And then the other way we build in space is every week, you know, if we're doing that Friday afternoon planning, our priority list, career, relationship, self, we can take a couple minutes to do a calendar triage. You can literally buy yourself hours and minutes by doing this. Look at your calendar for the next week. Take that time Friday afternoon, look at your calendar for the next week. Ask yourself a few questions. First, what do I really not want to do? Does it absolutely have to be done? I don't know, maybe it does. Maybe Earth will crash into the sun if you don't do it, but maybe not, right? If you're gonna cancel something, it is much kinder, better to do it in advance where other people can make other plans so you don't have that overload, or the mental overhead of that in your calendar. So you can ignore things. You can minimize stuff. You can compress things that you cannot kill. I've always wondered why meetings take 30 or 60 minutes. Like all meetings take 30 or 60 minutes, as if this is sort of like divinely decreed. You can have a 20-minute meeting. You can have a 40-minute meeting. You can have a 37.5-minute meeting. I tell you, if you show up for a meeting with a 37.5-minute agenda, people are going to think it's very well thought through. You can delegate things. So look at your calendar. What could somebody else take on? I've been awesome at this. I've been doing this for years. It's time to start nurturing someone else's talent. So think about who would be excited about this as opposed to you being not so excited about it. And it turns out we can do those three strategies at home as well. We can ignore, minimize, and outsource at home. People always tell me, Laura, it costs money to outsource household chores, which is true, but it doesn't cost anything to lower your standards. So I would highly recommend that as well. Seriously, I often leave it like that, but since I've got an all-women's group, let's go into that a little bit more. I had one of the time logs for I Know How She Does It. It was a woman who's a lawyer. She had one really late night at the office. Come home at 10 p.m. Her husband had been watching the kids. They'd been having a great time, right? But he wasn't of the mindset. He didn't have the story going that when his spouse comes home, the house should be spotless. So the kitchen's still a mess. She comes home at 10 o'clock. What does she do? Starts cleaning it. And I'm looking at this on her time log, and I'm like, why? Is there going to be an 11 p.m. home inspection? Like, is somebody coming at 11 p.m. to give you a gold star that everything is put away, the kitchen is clean, the toys are up? No, those toys are going to come out again the next morning, but you will never get that hour back. So relax, put your feet up, have a glass of wine, let it go, right? Borrow the theme song from Frozen and just let it go. So that is how we build in space into our lives. So strategy one was mind your hours. Strategy two, look forward. Strategy three, first things first. Strategy four, move the tiles around. Strategy five, build in space. Strategy six, take care of yourself. So the women I studied, I said that they were sleeping on average just a little bit under 8 hours a day. Most of them were exercising too. About 90% had some exercise on their logs. The average was about 3.5 hours a week, which is way on the far end of the bell curve of the population. And I actually don't think this is a coincidence, because building a big career, raising a family, both very meaningful things, but both things that require a lot of energy. How do we get energy? Well, for most of us, sleep and exercise help add to our energy levels. Sleep and exercise don't take time, they make time. Right? And anything you try and skimp on either of those, you're going to pay back in lost time later. I saw this from a woman who kept a time log. She had been telling herself, you know, I'm not the kind of person who can leave for an hour every day at lunch to exercise. And then she said, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to become the kind of person who can leave for an hour every day to exercise. So she did. She started doing this boot camp type thing from noon to one every day. And so while technically she was at her desk less than if she had been sitting there eating salad, shoveling it into her mouth while staring at the computer, she said, you know what, I had my best year ever. Because she'd come back at 1 o'clock and she could actually focus for the rest of the afternoon, get stuff done. What happens when we try to work through lunch, we're not taking real breaks? All of a sudden around 2:30 p.m. we're like, oh, I'm looking at that same email several times, and oh, somebody sent me a social media alert, and I go click on that. No, look at his vacation, and look, oh, there's an ad for Nordstrom's on the side, and oh, I like those boots, those are nice boots. Oh gosh, did Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, what did they do today? Next thing you know, 45 minutes has gone down that rabbit hole, right? And what is happening is that your brain needed a break, and you didn't take a break. So it took a fake one. Right? So better to give your brain a real break. Get up from the desk. Go do something that's going to add to your energy levels, whether it's taking a quick walk, getting some fresh air, talking with a friend, observing tea time. There's a reason people do tea time, so you can focus the rest of the day. You can also build in breaks into the week as a whole. I think weekends are the secret weapon of successful people. And it's not that they work around the clock on the weekend, it's not that they never do work on the weekend. It's more that they approach it with a different mindset, which is that weekends are going to add to my energy levels. Right? And that's a little bit the opposite of how many of us approach it, right? We're like seeing our weekends disappear into this death march of chores and children's activities. Think ahead of time about what three things could I do this weekend that would add to my energy levels? Maybe it's going for a bike ride. Maybe it's meeting up with a friend for coffee. Maybe it's going to worship services. The three things that would add to my energy levels, and then make sure they happen so that you hit Monday ready to go. So that is strategy 6 to take care of ourselves. And finally, strategy 7 is to use bits of time. So even if we're doing all these great things with our schedule, filling it with the important stuff first things first, we can wind up with small bits of time that are hard to use well. You're waiting for a phone call to start, waiting for the carpool to bring your kids back from soccer practice, waiting in line for, I don't know, an elevator. What do we always do? We pull out the phone, right? Look at our emails, spend our lives deleting newsletters we cannot remember subscribing to. That is one thing you can do with small bits of time, but there are other things you can do as well. And I saw this best from another time log. This is a woman who lived in Chicago. Horrible commute. She had to drive on this crowded rush hour freeway. She kept her time log for me in winter of 2014, which was an incredibly snowy winter in Chicago. She had two young boys that she was responsible for getting to daycare in the morning, and those of you with kids in daycare will appreciate the particular horror of this situation, which is that her daycare only had street parking. So it adds this huge element of uncertainty. Will I get a spot close by? Will I be hauling two kids and their stuff in the snow for several blocks? I don't know. Exciting. So she had to deal with this horrible commute every morning. She has to load the car precisely 7:10 in order to be at her desk at 8:30. And her time log shows her getting the boys ready by 7 o'clock every morning. What happens between 7 and 7:10? Well, it would have been very easy to spend those 10 minutes checking email, puttering around the house, maybe reading magazine stories on how to find an extra hour in the day. She could have been sitting there saying, woe is me, I have this horrible commute coming up, can't you see I have no time? But instead, on her time log, it showed she spent those 10 minutes every morning playing with her boys. They'd get ready by 7, they'd spend 7 to 7:10 reading stories together, playing games, snuggling, laughing, starting the day with a little bit of happiness rather than stress. And I thought that was so profound. We can all do that. Small moments have great power. And you can use your small moments for bits of joy, too. Maybe it's reading something wonderful on the bus on the way to work. I know when I had a job that required two bus rides and a subway ride, I used to go to the library on weekends and load up on books I could read, and it made the whole thing almost enjoyable. Breaks at work can be used for praying or meditating. It's about looking at the whole of your time and seeing where you can put the good things in. And I truly do believe that we have time. Even if we are busy, we have time for what matters. And when we focus on what matters, I believe we can build the lives we want in the time we've got. So thank you all very much.
Thank you, Laura. That was awesome and inspiring and actually calmed me down. So we're going to have questions now from the audience. And for about 10 minutes, there's microphones that you all can line up at. I thought I'd lead off with my own question to get you started.
Okay, great.
So obviously priorities are a huge sort of, you know, common thread through everything that you're saying. There are times probably that people feel like it's almost impossible at certain parts of their life or career, young kids, new promotion, where priorities just feel not doable. Are there ways that you know, are there certain times that it is impossible, or should it always be a thing that you can do?
So I don't think it's ever impossible. I think they need to change, and you need to sort of give yourself grace for the state of life that you are currently in. Okay. I have four children. My youngest is 21 months old, and he's a horrible sleeper. So here I am off telling people about do great things before breakfast, right? My 21-month-old wants to do great things before breakfast, and he unfortunately can't do them by himself, so he's waking me up at the crack of dawn or way before dawn most mornings. So I'm not doing a whole lot of, like, you know...
He's taking advantage of those morning hours.
He's taking advantage of those morning hours. And so for me, you know, right now I'm having to deal with that, and there's certain things that are not happening because of the sleep issues. But I understand that he will grow up, right? Like, he won't be a toddler forever. They do get older. They do get at least start sleeping better. So I don't think it's impossible, though. What I think has to happen when you're in an extremely busy phase of life is you figure out, what are my non-negotiables, right? What are the things that absolutely have to happen for me to feel like life is sustainable? And I've seen this, you know, I've spoken with, like, accounting firms that what do they do during February and March, right, in order to make life sustainable or something. It's for people to figure out, maybe it's that I need to, you know, move my body for at least 20 minutes a day. Like, I'm not training for a marathon during this time, but I'm going to, you know, go for a quick walk. Or, you know, it's that I need to have dinner with my family 3 nights a week. I'm not going to be able to do 7 during this time of my life, but I could do 3. So figuring out what it is that absolutely has to happen for you, making sure those things happen, protect those with your whole being, and then let everything else go.
I think that makes sense, and I like the idea of the kind of checking in once a week for your priorities, because all of a sudden when your child is 23 months, you might realize, oh my God, he's suddenly sleeping an extra hour in the morning.
From your lips to God's ears.
I hope so, at least. Any questions from the audience? Feel free to come up to the microphone.
Yes.
Hi, thanks so much for your talk. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
My question is just a little more detail about the buckets, and particularly, like, the career bucket.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about planning for that particular bucket, are you talking about your regularly assigned tasks, or are you talking about the growth and the direction for, like, the things you want to put in that bucket?
I think generally talking more about the growth and direction, the important but not urgent things, right? The things that don't absolutely have to happen, but the things that you want to have happen for your growth, thinking of the long term. And so that's why you can make this list. Obviously, you have a priority list that you talk about with your manager or your direct reports or anything like that. But there's also just your list you have for yourself that maybe for your long-term career. It may be about networking beyond your actual organization. It may be about looking into a class you want to take because you're thinking of switching careers in the future. So it can be, you know, hopefully there are big chunks of your time, of your workday, that are taken up by things that are an amazing top priority for you. Like, I hope that is people's work experience. But it's probably not all 8 hours, and it's probably not every day. And so we think about, like, what are the things that I really want to do? These are the top priorities.
Any other questions?
Just a quick question on the outsourcing idea. Mm-hmm. I see some of the, and it varies amongst the different people that I work with, but some women, it seems like they outsource an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I struggle with that a little bit. You know, I'm, like, for example, now every Wednesday I take off early to take my daughter to dance, but yet, you know, a lot of people will hire someone to run the kids around to all their different sporting activities. So how do you balance that?
So I think you want to outsource the things that you don't care about doing and keep the stuff that you enjoy doing. So if you have a choice of going to the grocery store or going with your daughter to dance, probably should spend the money to have the groceries delivered and go with your daughter to dance, right? That's probably the way most people's priorities would split. You know, obviously, if you're a working parent, you need childcare. There's no shame in that whatsoever. You have to outsource certain things in order to make life work. But, you know, I've started recently outsourced. I found what I was doing is I was putting all my kids in front of the TV so I could make dinner. I was like, well, what if I have, you know, pay my sitter to stay a little late, she makes dinner, and I go hang out with the kids, right? And so that's how I'm using resources as a way to spend time on something I want to, as opposed to something that's more stressful and I don't really want to.
I do take time to walk every afternoon at work. As I'm walking out, I find people who will say, oh, I wish I could take the time off. So, is it me that I always end up explaining, like, you know, I have to take the work, you know, I have to take that half hour off, otherwise, you know, I won't be productive, my mind would be all cluttered. Like, what should I be thinking?
Yeah, there's always this, like, workplace sludge that goes on where people are just like, oh, I wish I could do that. As if you somehow have 25 hours in the day and they only have 24, that's not true. Like, we all have the exact same amount of time. What I would say is that if you are doing your job, if you're doing a great job, you're getting great reviews, if your manager is happy with you, then nobody else's opinion really matters. And if you want to, you can say, oh, it's such a priority for me to get this exercise. Would you like to come with me? Or you can even turn it into, like, we're going to have a one-on-one meeting later today. Maybe you'd like to walk with me over to the coffee shop. We can do it during this time, and then you can leave earlier. Win-win, right? But trying to incorporate them into that discussion of why you're doing it, but just understanding you're never going to win everyone over. Some people are just wedded to the idea that they are so, so busy, right? And they have no time whatsoever. So just repeat in your head, I don't have time means it's not a priority.
I used to be a line cook, and if you weren't really allowed to take breaks, but if you smoked a cigarette, you could have a cigarette break. So, I mean, it just the logic, right? So I would be like, well, I'm not going to start smoking, but I will go out with the chefs who are taking a cigarette break because it was acceptable for me to walk out with them and stand there while they smoke.
Just buy a pack and hold it.
Okay. Yes, in your quiz, it was a little interesting that you didn't talk about elderly care. I am a baby boomer.
Yeah.
So now my kid is grown, but now I have another responsibility of writing my mother's checks and making her doctor's appointments and checking on things for her. So how do you balance that with work, home life, keeping a husband happy, and doing all the things you need to do for your mother and her dog that came with her?
All right, well, so I'm glad you brought that up because, yes, obviously I'm in sort of the little kid phase right now, so that's sort of where my mind is. But I know that elder care is a huge and growing issue for many people, and it's got many parallels. There's some obviously key differences. Like, I can make my two-year-old do stuff, and good luck with that with your mother. You have to approach it in somewhat of the same way, which is figuring out, well, what are my priorities right now, and how do I make sure that these things that absolutely have to get happen do? And it's not going to happen every single day, right? Some days you're going to be probably a better employee and not as great a daughter, but other days you're going to have to give more to being a daughter and less to being an employee. And if you look over the whole of 168 hours and you can sort of balance those two, then that's much better. I try to keep, especially if it's really in an intense time, with elder care, like if there's really like been a health emergency recently or something like that. The parallel I use is when I think of myself in the newborn days, which with each of my four children, which is that you have to accept that there's not a lot that's going to get done. You can make maybe three things beyond basic life maintenance that you want to get done today. And I think, well, what are those three things beyond life maintenance, keeping me and this baby alive, that we're going to get to today? And in the whole of like the day, the 24 hours, which you see a lot of, you could get through those three things. And as long as there are three things that matter, well, three things a day is like 21 things a week, right? That's over 1,000 things a year. And so you can still make progress on things. You just have to lower your expectations of getting the stuff that's nice to do, but not absolutely critical.
So, excuse me. So what if your husband is definitely a talker and you love talking with your husband, but he talks a lot for a long time. So, well, I think that he'll be very excited about this whole time crunch thing. He's in finance in Manhattan, blah, blah.
Yeah.
How do I kindly say, can we do this in like 20 minutes of conversation about something? And his mom, too, is the same way.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, so you knew what you were getting into, though.
Very true. Very, very true. And normally I start doing this, and he gets it.
He gets it. Okay, well, it's good. I mean, maybe there's like a little a signal you have that's like a nice, loving signal.
But is there tips for like kind of getting buy-in from people who you're like, wait, I'm not the time sucker?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a couple ways to handle this. One is that you sort of gently remind, like, oh, God, this is such a great story, but, you know, we're supposed to be, you know, at dinner with our friends right now. Let's wait and let's finish it later. Yeah, just sort of approaching it nicely about that. But the other thing is, you know, people in general are a good use of time. And sometimes I realize that letting somebody just tell their whole story is, like, the best gift I can give them. that, and it often doesn't take that much longer than cutting them off, which it can, you know, you have to find your own balance with this, and I don't know your husband, obviously, but sometimes if I'm just like, oh my God, would this person please get to the point? I'd just be like, okay, then what happened? Yeah, and what do you want me to know about that? Right, you know, so questions like that. And say, that is so amazing. And then, did this happen? Like, get to the point, you know, you're trying to get to the point here without saying it so much. But as a journalist, I sometimes deal with this with sources who want to tell me their whole life story. And I'm like, oh, please,
make it stop. Thank you, that's better than wrap it up.
All right, I wanted to thank everyone for coming today. Laura will be doing more things throughout the day. She'll also be signing her books in the exhibit hall. So
not till later in the afternoon. I have a session right after this. Okay. So normally the book signings are right afterwards, but I'll be later in the day over at the place.
Of course, her day is well scheduled. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.